But he was good, and he really was good. And I felt truly inspired by Mr. Leaker, was his name. And he's long gone, of course, but that was a step toward deciding that chemistry was important to me as well as science. And then the medical side of it partly was because of my brother-in-law being at Eli Lilly, and the idea that he would kind of share with me, sorts of things that they were doing. I went through his lab once. That was very exciting. And the whole thing of actually trying to find things that would cure people with serious diseases was a very inspiring idea. My brother did not go into medical research, but he was in the chemical field, and he actually worked out in New Jersey at Westfield Farm Products, and at several other places before he decided to go into the insurance business at probably about the age of 35 or thereabouts.
Well, your brother-in-law and your elder brother, were they bachelor's level chemists?
My brother-in-law was bachelor level, and my brother was bachelor level chemist. Neither of them. Although my brother-in-law went on to get his law degree after he'd been at Lilly for about 10 years, he went on and got his a doctor of law, whatever you call it, LLD or whatever, and became a patent attorney. They were both bachelor chemists.
And your oldest sister, what did she do?
Both of my sisters were teachers, and they both got married and both ended up with families and long marriages. Both of them were married more than 50 years before they lost their husbands. But there was a big awareness of the education dimension in the family. Obviously, they were both teachers. They were one was taught mentally handicapped. The other one taught fifth grade. So it's really a K-12 type of education.
So there was a pretty chemistry and education between them.
Yeah, were pretty important subjects. In fact, my grandfather on my father's side, I didn't realize this when I was young because he was 80 years older than I was. I didn't know him for a few years before he died. But he was a teacher at the same school that I went to high school. It was called the German English Academy at that time, which is kind of a funny thing. German English Academy became Walk University School, and he was a teacher and a well-respected teacher there. So there was a lot of education in the family.
Did religion have any importance in your parents' life?
It was certainly not of paramount significance. My father was an avowed agnostic, and my mother was always believed that it would be very desirable to have a more religion in the family. So with her side of the family being somewhat religious, I was shepherded off to Sunday school when I was about 9. My father didn't object, obviously, but my mother thought this was really essential. And I was a pretty devoted student I was a little split personality. I was a Congregationalist and then a Luther. An Episcopalian in between there. So I had something of everything. But I guess it was the main schools that I attended were Congregation and Lutheran, that is Sunday schools, and actually was got halfway through confirmation as a Lutheran, but it began to interfere with my high school because I was doing that when I was 14 and 15. But it was, I would not call it a religious family, no, but my mother obviously was, she took it very seriously.
What were your principal pursuits apart from school in 13, 14, 15, whatever?
In high school, I had a couple of objectives. One was not to take courses from really nasty professors, and I managed to miss some awfully good courses that way. But I had a great deal of concern about getting beaten up in classes. I wanted to have the highest grade point average in the school, and I let that dictate foolishly that those courses that you could get beat up pretty badly, I just didn't take. I took all advanced courses that there were. I mean, I took physics, and I took differential, not what is it, geometry and solid geometry and trigonometry and those courses. But I did avoid a really nasty American history course that I regretted ever since. That was a great course. For the most part, I concentrated on science. I naturally had to take language courses because of the need ultimately for science, having had both French and German. became less important later on, but it was a pretty good, it was a very, very good school. It's an even better school today. Now called the University School of Milwaukee, and involves a merger of three schools, and it is an extraordinary school. We have actually maintained contact with that high school, and they're a model school for the state, and they do great things in the state of Wisconsin. I mean, it's really a remarkable school. So, and we were fortunate. We knew it was a very good school, and we were there. And we certainly got good education. In fact, it was so, being a private school, both Troy and I had scholarships, being a private school, you have the benefit of very, very high concentration of teachers, up to the point where they have time to spend. So I did take calculus from on an informal basis from my high school teacher in math, who was just an inspired teacher as far as I was concerned. So there was a very powerful send-off for anybody. I'd strongly recommend that the benefits of a really good high school can make all the difference in the world, and I certainly was a beneficiary of that.
How did your ambition, your grade point ambition play out?
How did my grade point? I had the best grades in school.
You did?
Yeah, not every time, but most of the time. But I think that I was also a frightful teacher's pet. I mean, there was no question about it. When I finally finished, about the finish of my senior year, there were kind people in the company, in the school that would reflect for me what I was like during those 4 years, and they made it very plain. I was a royal pain, because there would frequently be many, many times where the whole class would be a dialogue between the teacher and George, and I thought that was pretty straightforward and normal. The rest of the class thought it was normal also, but very, very weird, and I think I was viewed as fairly weird because I took everything very, very seriously. And I just, I can't say I enjoyed school. It was very, very easy for me, so I suppose I enjoyed it a lot more than if it was hard for me, but it was a good school, and I think the personal opportunities were really remarkable. You could get help from just about anybody, any time, and they volunteered their time, and it was primarily in math and science that I got the extra attention, and in fact, I sort of did penal servitude for Mr. Leaker. I took care of his garden, and I took care of his plants in his greenhouse, and in turn, I got a lot of private attention whenever I wanted it. I wanted to understand what the word isotope meant. I remember that. It was just perplexed me. What could an isotope be? And I think he had a little trouble explaining it to me, but I was perfectly happy to take the time and try and straighten out this kid that had just learned something about the periodic table but hadn't learned quite enough yet.
Were your brothers like that at school, or were you an aberration?
My sisters, there were some aberrations, but I wasn't it. My sisters were outstanding students, both of them. And my brother, having come along, and he went to the same school they went to, he was an aberration because he decided his role was troublemaker. So he was very, very smart, but he just found it was more fun to be smart and cocky and get the teachers upset. So he was the bad boy in the family, and I knew that too. But I also knew he was very smart. He was a smart guy, and he spent a lot of time with me. I got a lot of personal growth from a very, very understanding brother who was 7 years ahead. So he would dose me up sometimes with the latest things that he was learning, and I felt privileged to have the chance to hear somebody take the time with me and explain to me what those things all meant. And usually in math and science, because he was like I was very interested in math. Oh, that was best for crew. I shouldn't overlook that. That was a fortunate situation. Remind me of that. My sisters were enough older that they were already, by the time I got to that age, they were off in college and married before. I think they were married when I was 13 and 14 and thereabouts. So my brother was still in college, but at least I'd see him on the weekends and stuff.
Did you have manual dexterity and experimental pursuits, or was it theory?
My lab work was always good. I was kind of lazy, so I would try to figure out shortcuts in the lab, and sometimes that would backfire, and I wouldn't probably do the best work that there was. But I was very satisfactory in terms of, and I was interested in lab work. I had a lot of interests in school. I had a lot of sports interests, and I really tried to minimize the amount of time. That was through. Through Northwestern, too. With Northwestern, I was taking courses. I had a major in chemistry, and I had a minor in physics, a minor in math, and a minor in biology. And when you have that much physics and biology, as well as chemistry, you're taking an awful lot of lab courses. And I was on the track team, and I was interested in intramurals. And I did some of my labs got short shrift. I'd have a 3-hour lab. I'd be out of there in an hour or an hour and a half, so I could get out to practice or do something else. So I probably wasn't. I didn't distinguish myself. I used to. You'd actually see it on your grades. I'd get an A on coursework and an A minus on the lab, and it was kind of a pain. So I wasn't remarkable. I never was remarkably good at independent research. I didn't enter into contests. They weren't so common then, like Westinghouse and things like that. I don't even remember when they had them. But I never attempted to do an independent experimental program. I had to when I was at Northwestern in the honors program, and I did an experimental program, and I actually achieved a publication from my senior thesis. But it was not remarkable. It was certainly not not an inspired piece of either theoretical or experimental work.
You didn't do, go back in the earlier, slightly earlier, the high school era, the sort of chemistry sets, backyard explorers.
Well, that I did. It was written up in one of these articles, and the playing around with explosives. That was irresistible. It was absolutely irresistible. You find out that you can take a metal and you can put it in water and you can blow up the hydrogen that's being generated. And then you can find it can be sodium, it can be potassium, it can be lithium, it can be C. Good Lord, you're suddenly catapulted into just the most exciting dimension. And I don't know whether it's the noise or whether it's the remarkable chemical phenomenon that you're witnessing and the fact that you have control over this. And I never even came close to having any kind of an injury or anything like that. I was actually pretty fastidious in how I did these things, but I had some pretty good sized explosions, there's no doubt about that. And a friend was injured playing around with white phosphorus, which I didn't like white phosphorus. I was more of a metals man, sodium and potassium. And I loved to use zinc and hydrochloric acid to make. I was fascinated by the concept that air is made up of. That water is made up of hydrogen and oxygen, and that you can duplicate the oxygen of air with the oxygen you pull out of electrolysis. Learned out from my brother-in-law, I learned how to electrolyze water. Take AC to DC. So you have direct current, so you can separate the gases. Now it's not so bad. Sometimes you can make them both together, and then they're all ready to blow. But I did learn a lot about the two areas that I did the most in: electricity and chemistry. And chemistry was. With malice aforethought, they have something quite impressive. And actually, although I ended up impressing my future wife to some degree, I impressed the other people, other men. I was more boy oriented than women oriented when it came to explosions. We were just bad boys. That's all. We just thought it was more fun than anything to make a loud noise. And never had any encounters with police or any encounters with injuries, so we were spared. Although I look back and I say, boy, I probably shouldn't have been doing some of the things I did, but they weren't that bad. It was usually little chunks, maybe something like 50 grams of sodium or potassium. Wrap it up in paper so you kind of keep the hydrogen around a little bit. You kind of optimize the circumstances for the blow, and then you throw it down the sewer, you throw it somewhere where you're a fair distance away when it goes off. So that experimental activity I did do. Useful experiments, I can't recall having done very many of them.
Where did the sodium and so on come from? School life?
Oh, yeah. Now that's a terribly unfair question, Arnold. Naturally, we sent to it through the internet. You could buy it. It turned out that we thought Mr. Leaker wouldn't mind if a small chunk of sodium disappeared from his lab once in a while. That's where it came from. We did buy something from the store. You can buy mercury in the store, which we did. And why, I can't remember what I was doing with mercury, but I know I remember buying mercury. Maybe just fascinated by that. And trying to build an anemometer or something else, I can't remember. But the stuff, the chemicals were procured from the chemistry lab.
The combination of the academic prowess in science, this is remote at that age. I mean, this is remote from both your father's and mother's educational experience. What did they? How did they?
Well, my dad.
Do what you were up to?
Their attitude about what people in the family should do is they should do what they love to do. That was it. So there was no, except for some bias on my father's side, that I should go into business. I should do whatever I wanted to do, as long as I was aware that maybe business was a good opportunity. And his dream for me, which I never developed or realized, was that I'd go ahead and get my MD if that's what I wanted, and I'd get my PhD after my MD if that's what I wanted. But maybe by that time I'd be interested in getting an MBA at Harvard. And that was his contribution to guidance, and that would be that I would be interested enough to try to combine the science with business, because he had a great respect for business and what it, he felt that there was a great deal of public service in a business career. He felt he was serving his customers, and he took that very, very seriously. So I felt that he really liked the idea that I would then apply what I learned in a useful way, namely business. And I resisted the business thing pretty hard. He wanted me to run his company more than once, and I decided I didn't want to run a business, namely an insurance company, which he had started from scratch, but I just didn't want to do that. I was very excited about 3M by that time, so after I had kind of redirected myself away from medicine into just plain research, which was what my intent was anyway, I went to 3M and got involved in business most backhandedly. It was certainly not a preconceived idea that I wanted to be a manager or anything like that. That was a big decision later on, a lot later. So I was going to be an MD that did research. And then when I couldn't, in the thing that you wrote, by the way, there, so it wasn't me that I actually correct, because it came out wrong in an article. I was asked, how did I change from medicine into pre-med into a regular, go to a graduate school in physical chemistry. And what had happened was I had applied to medical school when I was 18. And I did that because I was going to push through 3 years of schooling in 2 years and get my complete my junior year in 2 years. And at the end of my junior year, hopefully get admitted into medical school as a three-year undergrad, which they did do at that time. Unfortunately, the year I tried to get admitted was the year that veterans were returning, 1946. And what actually happened was that there was a class that started in 47, where a lot of veterans were coming back, and the classes were full, and they said, we don't need to take a junior, and anyway, you're only 18 years old. Here I was applying to medical school at 18, and that was really pretty stupid. That's where the 18 came in. I did not get admitted then. I was accepted for medical school after my third year in college, which was in 1948, and I sacrificed my $50 and didn't go to medical school. I was just plain. I just felt that they had done me in, because I'd gone to Northwestern primarily because it's a great medical school. I'd had good average all the way through, a very good average. I averaged about 8 minus in college, and I just felt they ought to have admitted me. I was a conscientious person. I didn't see any reason not to. And I couldn't understand not making it. I didn't apply to any other school, so by the time I realized I was going to be admitted to Northwestern, it was too late to apply to another medical school, and I couldn't. And I didn't get in after my my second year in college or my third year academically. So when I was accepted, I had been spending a lot of time with my advisor in college. He was a very good guy, and he was very encouraging that I was a super candidate for physical chemistry, and he was a physical chemist. I had the kind of brain that would be great for physical chemistry, much better than all this memorization for medical. I said, well, I just like this medical thing. He said, well, you weren't going to do medical. You weren't going to be a physicist anyway. Why don't you go on and do the research side, and if you want to go back, get your MD afterwards, as long as you're just going to do the research side. I thought, well, that's not too bad a plan, so I switched over. But the decision to go to medical school for me was, the decision to go to a pre-med was very simple. Suddenly I just thought there's nothing more important than medical research. And I actually haven't ever changed from there. I do believe that is true. And then it was just a question of how to get the education necessary so you could do medical research. And I thought the prerequisite would have been the MD. But the error that's in there is that I received my bachelor's degree at 18. I did not. I got my bachelor's degree then in the in June of 1948, and at which time I was actually 20. But I would have gotten into medical school at 19, which would have been kind of fun, but they wouldn't let me in.
So the kind of Northwestern was a no-brainer for the reasons that you mentioned.
You mean going to Northwestern?
Yeah.
Yeah, it really was a very simple thing. I had it had a wonderful reputation at high school that I was in. A number of graduates had gone there, so I had a first-hand feeling that it was a good school. And it was primarily, as compared to the University of Wisconsin, I think today you'd be hard-pressed to say which medical school was better, but in those days it was clear that Northwestern Medical School was considered exceptional compared to University of Wisconsin. Those are two schools about the same distance away from Milwaukee. I didn't have any huge appetite then go across the country or anything like that, so I had a lady friend in Milwaukee at the time, I'd like to be fairly close, and that was my future wife, of course, so she was still in high school for one more year, and I went on to Northwestern, but the main thing was the medical school.
And your father's business was doing well, I mean, whether it was financial?
Well, it was interesting, when I got that scholarship, I got a scholarship at Northwestern, my dad's income was extremely modest. It was so modest that I could get a hardship scholarship. Dad had taken an awful beating during the Depression. He started a department store in 1927, bought into it in 1928, and got more and more into it. And actually, he was not hit by the crash as much as he was hit by Sears and Roebuck moving in down the street from him, and he just got wiped out. I mean, we see that today. I believe every time I see a Walmart and destroyed six little companies, you know, I just think that for the grace of God goes my dad, because that's what happened. He was a neat little department store, and all of a sudden Sears moved in right on the same streetcar line, but six blocks further on, and he said he watched his customers go by on the streetcar, and that was it. So he was wiped out as the department store had to was dissolved, and he lost all that he put into it. And then he started in the insurance business, and that was a nightmare because nobody could afford buying insurance. And then the crash came, and then nobody could afford buying insurance in 1930 and 1931 and 32 and 33. So those were tough years. Now, I didn't go off to college until 1945, but he hadn't adequately recovered from the Depression. As the country had not adequately recovered. Right through the beginning of the World War, there wasn't much recovery from that Depression. We kind of forget the fact that the World War actually, in a sense, was timed about for taking us out of that Depression. So he had suffered, struggling in the insurance company for those years, in the insurance business, and then finally he emerged, when he spotted group insurance as a possibility and got into that, then he emerged as a very successful insurance person and actually started an insurance company. But he started the life insurance company when he was 65. So we had tough years, and when I applied for Northwestern, it was not hard to get a scholarship. That was straightforward because his income was so low.
How did your brother make
my brother worked his tail off in high school, at college. He actually did not have a scholarship because he wasn't that great a student. Yeah, they say he was a nice, neat guy, but he certainly didn't have the academic credentials. So he'd take on jobs. He was the guy in the family that did work from the time. He would carry three paper routes when he was 15 or 12 or 13, very young, and then he got off to the University of Wisconsin. He went actually to State Teachers College in Milwaukee, which was largely to save money because it was a block away from our home. But then when he finally was able to figure out how to get to Wisconsin, he had several jobs in Wisconsin. He had four jobs, and he worked at a hotel there, and he just sort of crammed a lot of things in, so he paid his own way, all of it, every bit of it. I didn't pay all mine, although I did. I also did work when I was at Northwestern. I had a board job, and I graded papers, and I did some tutoring. So I did have, but it wasn't enough to cover everything. And I had a scholarship, but I still couldn't cover all my ongoing expenses. So it was a relatively modest strain on my dad, but I was actually supported for the extra expenses from the family, but the scholarship was possible because his income was low.
Yeah, and all of this sequence must have been very tough on your mother.
That's a very interesting observation, because you remember that my mother was a Blatz, and as I say, the Blasses had gone beyond the point of being a prosperous family, but it were recognized as being very prosperous in Milwaukee. But the brewery took its awful beating during Prohibition, and the family lost control of it and never extracted any assets from the brewery after about 1930. In fact, by after about 1922, at 22, my grandfather lost his job as president or something, and the thing was going down the tubes, and other people took over the business. So there was no asset there, but there was a lot of pride, and it was difficult for my mother when things went badly. She was very wise, she was a very, very sharp lady, but she couldn't quite handle the idea that my dad should be able to expand his office when he was trying to grow, and yet she had to be very parsimonious with funds, and we lived in a rental place. We just rented all this. We didn't own it. My dad never owned any of the property that we lived in, and it was a fairly hefty thing there. But she was, I mean, there are other values that are much more important than your economics, but I think it was, there were tough times for her, yes.
Was this, against that sort of medicine, a kind of heroic thing and grace? I mean,
there was no doubt that the concept of doing something in medicine was extremely exciting to my mother. I mean, that was inspirational. I mean, there's no doubt. In fact, she wasn't that enthusiastic about the business world anyway, and the thought that there were three of us in science was very exciting for her. She liked that. The education in science and medicine, that's probably... That's a mother input. The business side, you can see where that came from. both were needed. If you're ever going to do something like biotechnology, obviously you have to have the excitement on both sides.
Yeah. In Northwestern, between the physical chemistry and the health and birth and your keep, that must take up most of your time. Did you have any time for... Or recreation, diversion as an undergraduate, and also, what age was it when you actually went?
When I actually graduated at 20, and during that time, I was in. I did a lot of things. I mean, school was always easy for me. I could cover a three-hour lab in an hour and a half usually, and sloppily. I don't mean I was wonderful. It's just that I'd get by. I do it well enough to get a good grade, but it was I never had to spend a lot of time on homework and stuff. That was not a big problem for me. I was in every intramural sport that there was. I would be, you know, we played touch football, and we played basketball, and we played baseball, and I was on the track team, and I don't know, I thought I had lots of diversions. I don't recall much in the art dimension, for example. I don't recall. Oh, I went to the. Interestingly enough, I did go down to the Chicago Symphony a number of times. It wasn't that far from Northwestern, but I certainly wasn't really active on anything but the school and school related activities. That was true. But it was pretty broad.
Were you living on the campus, or what was the campus?
Yes, I lived in a dormitory on campus the whole time in Northwestern for the 3 years I was there.
Mm-hmm. But were you backtrack a little, and you've mentioned Joy a couple of times.
Joy was out at Skidmore, she was a diversion during vacation times. But other than that. We didn't get to see each other very much, so she was 1 year behind me when I started college. She was 2 years behind me because I went through 3 years, and we did get to see each other more when I came out to Princeton. My first year at Princeton was the last year at Skidmore, so we got together quite a bit that last year. But I never dated anybody in Northwestern. That's a good point. I had probably more time than the average guy because my date was 1,000 miles away. So that probably was that spun for some time.
You met in high school?
Yeah, she was a freshman, I was a sophomore. We She came in as a scholarship student on her second year. That sometimes happened in that high school. You didn't get in the first year, you get in the second year. She came in the second year. And I was immediately charmed, there was no doubt about it. But we didn't date until I was a senior, but she was the first person I ever dated. That was a big thing in my life that I finally got kind of blackmailed into asking her for a date, and I finally did it, and she accepted finally. And that was the beginning of a relatively long period. And it's going to be 50 years of marriage this coming June, so it's a long time.
But what's, just to pause and talk a little about her family background.
Yeah, that's interesting. I don't know how relevant, but it's an interesting background. She was an orphan at the age of two. Her father had served in the First World War, had apparently been, these types of things today are more anecdotal than they are reality, but at the time it was believed to be reality that he had been given exposure to poison gas in the First World War, and he ended up with a brain tumor. And the linkage, which I'm sure medically could not be proved by any matter of means, if you think about Agent Orange and all the rest of this stuff, the fact was that the assumption in that family was that he contracted the brain tumor as a result of being exposed to gas. It was a dreadful period of about a year of rapid deterioration, and it turned out that Joy's mother was so totally devoted to trying to keep him as comfortable as possible during that year that she eventually was badly weakened, got strep throat, and died before he did by about 2 months. So there was a short span of time there. Within an absolutely short span of time, two-year-old Joy was made an orphan and does not remember her mother or her father. She had a sister, and we still know the sister, they're good friends, but she basically had no family. She was raised by grandparents, and then one set of grandparents, another set of grandparents, and finally two cousins as the grandparents, of course, died. Her childhood was not a wonderful childhood. We contrast it all the time. And she didn't look back on that childhood as something that was not through anybody's fault. Nature dealt her some tough blows.
And this was in Milwaukee?
That was in Milwaukee, yes.
Yeah. Was she German background as well? Or
no, she's Scotch English. So we met when she was a freshman. She came to our school. I'd heard about her before because my best friend had liked her had known her before. So I'd heard about her, and when she came and I saw her, I was immediately charmed. There's no doubt about it. I liked her from right off the bat. I don't think it was necessarily reciprocal. It took about 3 years before there was any reciprocity, probably for good reason. Kind of finky in those days. As they say, I learned from my friends what a fink I was later on. But she didn't. I don't think that ever bothered her. I think she liked me. As kind of an eager beaver student, I think she thought that was kind of nice. So we enjoyed each other right from the first day we met, but we didn't have any dates or anything for a couple more years.
Just follow that trajectory forward a little. That is, when did you get married? What did you after Skidmore?
What happened was, So we dated when I was in high school, then I went on to college, and she stayed back, and being Northwestern, it was kind of convenient, so we maintained that relationship. It was a little more strained when she was out of Skidmore, but we certainly corresponded like every day, practically. And then I went to Princeton, and during that last year, we saw a lot of each other with the plan of getting married as soon as she graduated, and we did. She graduated in 1950. On June 24th, which also was the day the Korean War started, we went off on our honeymoon from Milwaukee. We did not realize the war had started because we went up to the Keweenaw Peninsula in Michigan, which is rather isolated. And we got to the newspapers about the third day, and there it said, war this and war that. What are they talking about? These papers are nuts up here. But we were at war with the Koreans, of course. So that first year then was my last year at Princeton. So she graduated. I had my last year at Princeton. She worked during that time, earning, even though she was pregnant very quickly. So on our first anniversary, she 2 days before that, she gave birth to our oldest son in Princeton, and stopped working on my thesis, which was a real blow, because she'd been doing all the artwork for my thesis, all the graphs and charts and everything. so I had to finish up on my own. It was kind of nasty. But then I did submit my thesis, and it was accepted. And so that was my last year. I completed my orals, final orals in September. But by that time, I was already hired by 3M. And we of course, we'd been married for a year, and we had a young one about to arrive, and we made the decision that we would go to 3M because 3M sounded like it was such a very exciting company. And we liked the idea of being back in the Midwest and Minnesota. Just exciting. And it was a good year. I had a choice between about 10 different companies. So the Princeton period was a nice period, because when you got to Princeton, one of the first things everybody would flock to the library to read was the story about Princeton's philosophy of graduate students. And it was that, number one, it would screen the graduate candidates very carefully. Number two, if they were right at how well they screened them, then all of them should be capable of graduating, and they would. So you'd have to do something exceptional not to graduate once you got into Princeton. And number three, there was no reason in the world for you to stay more than 3 years for your doctoral degree. Yet the idea of holding on to these people as slaves for 4 or 5 or 6 years is good. Boy, you read this after you got there, and you're very glad you came to Princeton. You think this is about the best place in the world, and it turned out to be that way. There was, it did take just 3 years to get through. It was a fabulous place to learn. I mean, just wonderful. Of course, I really went there in part because I thought I might see Einstein somewhere along the line. I really did. I was, you know, it's embarrassing to think back how naive you are. And I did see Einstein. It was exciting. Though it isn't really, it doesn't sound as unsound as it might to the average person. I would go past the Institute for Advanced Study every day, and I would drool thinking about what's going on in there. But at one time or another, most of the key people would present at colloquia and seminars and so on. So you see, I saw Einstein quite a number of times, and many of the others that are really extraordinary scientists that were there. The Institute was just something you just marveled at, the brain power that was there. It was quite remarkable, and I don't know if it's been matched ever since, because it really was an amazing place. And Einstein walked around the campus in his smock, and that's the way he looked. He was usually escorted. I think it was his sister that escorted him around, and he never made a comment at any symposium or colloquium that I watched what was at when he was there, but it's still just a miraculous feeling to be in the same room.
Just go back, if you would, into Northwestern, and you mentioned earlier the guy recruiting you to physical chemistry.
Yeah, that was Professor Burrell, and he was Princetonian, so he. I don't think he'd like to be referred to as having recruited me. He simply gave me very sound advice that his alma mater, Princeton, was the best place to go, that physical chemistry was clearly my career path, and that that objective information was provided to me by my counselor at no extra charge, and I was therefore guided very strongly into applying to graduate school. And he was broad-minded enough to suggest that I might even want to apply to some others, which I did. I applied to California and Caltech and MIT and about 6 or 7. So he covered the waterfront, but he made very sure that I applied to Princeton. And when I got my Princeton acceptance, he sort of suggested that I wouldn't even have to wait for the others. Thanks a lot. I'm fine. It wasn't a hard call and I was fairly pressured by University of California. It was really Latimer, the guy's name that just came to me, was really on me for over and over again that I would be a great place to go to school. Caltech turned me down, which later on was a little bit embarrassing because I had so many good friends at Caltech when I was at Amgen. I didn't want to tell them that I wasn't good enough to get into Caltech. That was a heck of a blow. But it wasn't a blow. I never did understand it. There was something missing, and people don't always enlighten me. I would like to have understood that one, but every other place accepted me and beat up on me to try to get me to come. And Princeton was not the most enthusiastic. They gave me a rather particularly prompt acceptance, but they didn't do anything remarkable to try to say, this would be a great place for you. They did not afford me with a scholarship. They did give me a research assistantship right away, which was standard at the time. You ordinarily would expect to have your costs of graduate school paid for. Then I did get a scholarship later on, but I at the beginning I had a research master's. I had a teaching assistantship initially, and then I got a research assistantship. I didn't get a scholarship. The research assistantships were perfect, because what you did was you did nothing and you were compensated for it. You did the research you had to do anyway, and that was a nice setup. So Princeton was a super place. But I don't think there was anything wrong with Northwestern. When I got to Princeton, I realized that the physical chemistry that I'd had, the organic chemistry I'd had, the analytical chemistry I'd had, the physical chemistry, the whole thing was first quality. There was nothing that was left. And the same thing happened to me from high school. When I left high school to go to Northwestern, I found out that I cruised right off the bat. So education is so important. It's just so you're a privileged individual, mostly because somebody took the time to give you an education.